As promised from 5 minutes ago, we're back. And if you haven't listened to episode 472, maybe you should at least listen to the ending before coming here. And that would make a whole lot more sense. Welcome aboard, everyone. This is the podcast, This Is Whole Life, from Orlando, Florida, and the Whole Life Church. Every week, we dig a little deeper. We try to get questions asked, answered, or at least thought about,
pontificated
on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not saying that we have all the answers, but we do have two pretty good experts on the panel. We did stay at a Holiday Inn for 4 days in a row, so I do feel like it wasn't an express, but you know, I still feel like some of that rubs off and just last week. So I'm feeling good today about answering questions. And as always, your voice is welcomed in the conversation. You can reach us at email podcast@wholelife.church or leave us a voicemail. Man, I've been waiting for a voicemail. Carolina Dave, next one. Let's make it a voicemail, okay? 407-965-1607. And as always, there is, you said diagonal last episode, Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor. To her left, across the table from me, I'm not going to diagonal it this time. This is Ken Wetmore, lead pastor. To my left, crisscross applesauce, it is Half Hour Lucas. And it's me, Randy. How you doing? All right. That's probably 3 or 4 episodes ago, Half Hour Lucas. So
I think more.
More. Two spoons, Freud?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few of us around here on staff that have just become synonymous with certain things, and it just kind of makes it fun. So we have an email this week from Nate, who begins with, "I always enjoy seeing a reminder of something I loved from my childhood. The red books, as we called them, were always popular for evening worship. I have a few questions. Number one, where or how does one connect to God to gain the confidence Elijah has making these statements of life and death to hundreds, maybe thousands of people? What if he's wrong? Does God still act this way today?" Do you want to tackle that one and then go for question two?
Well, we probably should take them one at a time.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Melly.
First of all, I'm really curious about the word confidence, because for a good portion of this story, Elijah was hiding. So,
Yeah, was that by just fear, or well,
I mean, it was at least partially fear.
Well, it had to be, yeah, partially for sure.
But I think it. I think we sometimes think of these quote unquote Bible heroes, especially the ones from our red books, as these, you know, powerful, confident, you know, ready to step on the scene at all times. But I think these prophets were empowered in the moment. That's what it seems like from the story.
Does God still act this way today? I'm assuming that's referencing the support of Elijah.
I don't know. I've been trying to call down fire for a long time.
Not working out.
Some of us are happy that didn't work out.
Yeah, there's a few of us.
I think to Melanie's point, you look at Elijah and there's moments of confidence and there's moments of profound lack of confidence. Mm. And so I think Elijah is probably a lot more relatable for most of us than we give credit to. And the children's stories, when we read through those, it seems like there's never a moment of doubt that everything kind of moves forward. And that isn't the story the Bible tells. It is a different story than the one the Bible tells. We know that Elijah goes and tells Ahab that there's not going to be any rain until he speaks it. And then we see God moving him off to a brook and then another country. And this is a period of 3 years. I mean, just think back over the last 3 years that you've spent. You know, that's 3 years is a decent chunk of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what did Elijah go through during that time period? Did he, I imagine he was spending a fair amount of time talking to God, thinking about what was going on. So I think there was probably a fair amount of that. And when God finally does speak to him and send him back to talk to Ahab, I think that in my mind, it's like, oh, well, that's a little easier. If God says directly to you, hey, you know, if I hear a voice booming from heaven saying, Ken, go do this, well, you know, maybe that's easier to
yeah,
maybe to go do that and have some confidence. I don't know. But you also wonder exactly how God did speak to Elijah, because it's not 100. It just says that God told him to do it. So how did that happen? And a lot of it, again, I think really comes down to learning what God's voice sounds like and then training yourself to do things that God asks you to do. And Elijah's such a interesting character in that we really have no backstory on him. We really don't know, you know, how old he was when this happened. We don't really know how he came to be a prophet. We don't know his, did he have experience as being a prophet? He'd been a prophet for 20 or 30 years. And so he was, was he just called right at that moment? And so there's a lot of questions we don't know the answer to. And the second part of the question, Randy, was,
does God still act this way today?
And I would say yes.
Yeah. Well, did you ever stop and think that maybe, like, what if Elijah...
Okay, hold on. So, present us with some evidence that God still acts this way today.
That he speaks to us, or that he brings down fire, or...
Well, it sounds like what Nate is asking is, does God still do these kinds of grand manifestations?
Okay.
And I might be adding words into Nate's question, but...
Okay. So as far as like grand manifestations, does God bring down fire? You know, I haven't been a part of that, but, you know, I think that some of the stories that you hear from missionaries that have gone and done things, and for me, I have, you know, I've had a chance a few times in my life to watch things that felt pretty, pretty spectacular. I think there was when I was selling religious books door to door early in the summer, we went and prayed with this gentleman who was very intoxicated, and his friends told us that he had been, you know, basically just crippling alcoholism. And we prayed over him and prayed for him during that summer and went back and visited him, and he cleaned up his life and he wasn't drinking at that point. And that's something that I personally witnessed, and his friends said that he'd gotten better, and it was directly after we went and prayed for him. So I do think that God does things. I think that God gives us what we need for our culture and our context. And I think the culture and context that Elijah was in was very much a culture and context that needed fire from heaven and that needed things like that. I'm not sure that our culture needs that, although some of us would love it. It'd be nice. But I think that we hear God speak a lot more then we give ourselves credit for. Anyway.
No, that was...
that sounds more like the still small voice piece, which maybe is what we're getting at the end of the story, where, you know, there are these other grand manifestations while Elijah's in the cave and God says, no, I'm not in that. I'm in this sheer silence, or this still small voice, depending on which translation you read. I wonder if we, if the story is preparing us for less of Mount Carmel and more of still small voice in the cave.
Well, it's funny because I'll get back to the second of Nate's questions, but you said, you know, how does a story this ancient apply to my life today? And I think this kind of goes along with what we're talking about. And I'm like, I'm a bricklayer, so I understand like how you would go about building an altar, you know, whether that were block, brick, we can do it on a concrete if we want to form it. I mean, you know, I think we could make that work. And, you know, I was a boy, I still am sometimes, so water shenanigans, I mean, I'm all down for that. And of course, you know, each week at church, we challenge the church down the street to calling down fire from heaven. So sure, right? Like these are the things that we do. So I think it's perfectly natural to stop and think about how does something like this, if not in this grand all day event that just is, you know, goes down in legend and epicness and in stories and part of the Bible for thousands of years. If it's not that, then what is it? And that's hard to answer.
I think there are multiple ways to look at this story. One is, I think if we're going to be representatives of God and messengers of God, we have to be willing to speak truth to power. And obviously, there are moments of terror that are associated with that for Elijah's story. And so we may experience moments of terror when we have to speak truth to power. But I think it depends on who we want to be and if we want to be messengers of what God wants.
Okay. The second question is the prophet, and he says, I assume, inspired by God, according to the story, places a curse on all the people in the region. This included everyone, all classes of people. This would have meant many innocent lives likely died due to the famine. The poor are the first to suffer. How does this impact the image of a compassionate, loving God?
No, I think you've kind of led us to where, I think the question leads us to where it seems like it's taken it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I guess one of the questions I would ask is, do you think that leadership can cause blessing and can cause suffering? And the decisions that leaders make on a political landscape can bring suffering, or they can bring positive things. And the leadership that Israel had chosen for itself and that they were willingly following, from my perspective, was bringing them suffering.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you believe that, you can be blessed by your own efforts, by another God that you've created, at what point is it unfair for God to say, okay, if that's the God you want,
sure,
then let that God do what it can do. That's a you choice. And I think that sometimes we underestimate, you're right, the poor, the lowest in society, we tend to give all the power to the powerful, but where do they get their power from? They get their power by us giving them. And I know it's difficult to say, well, I'm not in favor of this person, I'm not in favor of that person, I speak out about this and nothing's happening. But yet as a society, when the majority give power to evil, there's suffering that comes about because of that. And so I think that's one of the things that we need to be thoughtful about, is that we do operate in community, and the leadership we choose is the leadership that we allow can impact us, and particularly when we go along with things that that are clearly not the way that God would have us do things. And so, you know, the country at that time was worshiping Baal. They were saying, he brings the rain. He's the one doing these good things for us. He's doing all that stuff. And part of Baal worship at that time was to also do child sacrifice. So was God wrong to try to get their attention and be like, hey, you guys are moving in the wrong direction? I, you know, it's, I think that for me, it's like I can totally understand where this question is coming from. I totally understand what's being said. I totally understand people who look at these kind of stories in the Bible and be like, that is not a particularly good God. That's I understand where they're coming from, but I also think that sometimes things are a little bit more that it's very complex and that God is working the best that God can for God's ultimate purpose of salvation for humanity, for not just a future on this earth, but a future elsewhere, an eternal future. And so I feel like when God gets to these points, it's because things are so dire.
Yeah.
Because people have so turned in the wrong direction. And at some point God says, I don't want to see suffering, but sometimes that is what causes people to look back and go, okay, maybe we're wrong about what we were doing that's causing destruction, that's causing pain, which Baal worship was. Baal is not a pleasant God. You can just read up on him and what was required for his worshipers. Not pleasant.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, and the things that were happening, like you're mentioning, you know, people sacrificing children and things like that. I mean, those accumulate as well. I mean, 3 years is two years longer than the flood, essentially. But also a lot can happen in 2 years of suffering. So I guess the balance is it's not fun to think about, but also that part isn't fun to think about, that it would just continue either.
But the point is well made. It is generally the poor and the unfortunate who are the first to suffer.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why God sends Elijah to a widow and an orphan, to point out that he does care about the marginalized. He doesn't send Elijah to a palace. He doesn't hide him away with the rich, who would have maybe been more capable of taking care of him. Instead, he sends him to an orphan and a widow to show that God does have compassion on that marginalized, and it isn't Elijah taking advantage of them. It's actually Elijah blessing them with his presence,
yeah,
in the presence of God.
Well, I like what you said. You said Elijah, true prophet of God, avoids getting murdered. And I'm like, if he didn't put that on his business card when he traveled everywhere and be like, do you know who I am? I'm like, I don't know who you are. Oh, here's my card. Come on. That's instant cred right there.
The t-shirt,
right?
I survived Jezebel.
it just made me think, though, if you're Elijah, in your heart, you have to be thinking to yourself, even though there's a lot of, obviously he knows what's coming in because he's the one that delivers the news and he knows it's going to be rough for everyone, including himself. But I like to think that maybe there's a spot like, God's looking out for me. That's pretty cool. And, but I like the t-shirt idea better. Good. I like that better, Melanie. But you say Baal was the god of rain and fertility, and they actually thought he died each year and came back to life in the spring to water the crops. You said there was an extra version here that we were going to talk about on the podcast. So,
yeah, I became less sure of it the further I went. So I was saying, the research that I did, basically there was myth that Baal would, again, in the late fall, winter, he would die because everything dies during the winter, right? And then in the spring, he would be revived back, would fertilize the earth during spring, summer, and then the crops would come in, and the process would happen. So basically, he would move from his summer house to his winter house, basically. He would descend into Hades or into the underworld, and then he would be summoned back in the spring to bring fertility and whatnot to the earth.
Okay. Melanie?
I was just processing.
Okay.
I'm listening.
No, I thought you had, it looked like you were about to continue on, so I was just going to leave you rope. I mean space if you wanted to jump in there.
I was just pondering Hades and the underworld.
Okay. So the part of the story that I, even as in the Red Book, I always thought was kind of creepy was the ravens I don't like birds. I think birds are generally disgusting.
That's not nice, Randy.
They don't seem very clean or sterile or whatever.
Birds?
Oh, birds are disgusting. Birds are horrible creatures.
Really?
Oh,
interesting. I know what I'm giving you for birthday next year.
Chicken? Barbecue chicken? Is that what you're going to get me? No, but just thinking of if, I don't know, I would be, and it wouldn't be ungrateful, obviously, because it is a time of famine. And it is, you know, when you're hungry, you'll eat just about anything. But the thought of eating food that's been touched by a bird, whether in their feet, their mouths, I don't care if they put it in a little gunny sack on the back of their thing and flew in and like it was packaged in a whatever ISO 7000 cleaned whatever.
Well, I guess. I guess depends during on the how time many of trouble you'll need to be
weeks
looking
on
for,
the wadi
something better.
You'll need to talk to about Uber Eats or DoorDash
Taco Bell.
Or something. I don't know.
I don't know if Taco Bell's any better than the birds' feet and mouths. I don't know if Taco Bell's any better than the birds' feet and mouths. Be honest with you.
Oh wow, we're sorry, Taco Bell. We love you, and we are looking for
sponsorship,
here,
but
so.
It's probably not today. We were at the beach, so we were not real time in the message, but when I was watching it, I didn't even have the book in front of me, but I can see the pictures. It was just like the hand outstretched and the bird coming in, and it's just, and every time it's just like, I can't do it. But Elijah, good for you that it worked out. And so,
I don't know why Kyle and Rochelle were just deeply disturbed when I shared the research that I come across that there are some scholars that believe that the ravens were actually storing the food and then Elijah was coming along and taking the food that they had stored. They didn't like that picture the same way. They felt like there was something wrong with Elijah stealing the raven's food.
But. Oh, he should have stolen all of it so they could have died.
Oh, wow.
That's how much I don't like birds.
Wow. The point made was, though, it was that basically ravens do hide away and store excess food. So if they've had enough, they'll hide it in this place. And so I thought that was fascinating because this ravine that Elijah was sent to by God would have appeared to have like I don't know what you call a whole bunch of ravens living in one place, but basically a colony. Would that be a colony of ravens or something
What's
like that?
What's that word we said last time? Insta what?
It wouldn't be a rookery, would it? That'd be, that would
interstitial
be,
does not work here.
No.
It's not an interstitial.
No.
But so I'm curious. They were bringing
Baltimore?
Food. Does it specifically say bread?
The Bible says that they brought bread and meat.
Okay, so unless
in the morning and in the evening.
Oh, meat.
Unless they were, you know, pounding the grain and mixing the oil and baking it and then bringing it to the place, the ravens were stealing it too.
Exactly.
So I kind of feel like this is a full circle moment.
Are we sure they weren't though?
They probably were going to Ahab's palace and pulling bread
now
off.
Now that
it,
I could, that would be
we
fun.
We could all be behind that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bring me a grape from Ahab's plate.
Yeah.
There you go. Man, can you imagine a grape?
And then you would eat it if a raven brought you
if
a
I knew
grape
it was
from Ahab's?
Ahab's
plate. You'd do that?
Yeah, just to spite
see,
Ahab.
I knew you would.
We found Randy's breaking
there
point.
There we go.
Whew, man, I'm glad we got that one.
That one got sorted out.
Oh, man. But then to think about it, like when you read the story, you know that the widow and her son aren't, I mean, they're not Jewish. They're not, they don't believe in the same God. They're Baal worshipers.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it isn't always immediately when you just read the story, that maybe not be the first thing that comes into your head, but it does change like her ability to me to say yes is almost as amazing as the birds bringing him food.
Yeah.
Like, you know, go get me a drink of water. Shut up. I don't know you. What do you mean? Like I'm a widow and by the way, make me some bread too.
But that's part of the missing cultural context.
Is
if somebody walked into, you know, if somebody walked into Whole Life and said, "Hey, I'm hungry," we would feel an obligation to get them some food. to give them something if they walked in here. And in that time and that place, if you showed up in some, if a stranger showed up in a city, in fact, this is one of the things that Sodom and Gomorrah are condemned for, is that they don't take care of the stranger that shows up. In fact, they do violence to those strangers versus providing for them. And in the Bible, this is a reoccurring theme, that if a stranger shows up in your town, good towns take care of the stranger. They feed them, they clothe them, they give them water, they give them a place to stay, they give them safety. Bad towns, evil towns, places that are outside of what God desires, abuse their visitors. And so this was not just unique to Israel. This was actually a part of that that culture in that region in that time. This wasn't just an Israelite thing. And so when Elijah shows up in Zarephath and he asks for a glass of water, he's asking for a minimum of what would be expected of somebody to do for a stranger that comes into your town. And so for the widow, the widow, of course, says, "Of course, I'll get you some water. That's easy." And, but what he then asks is for that bread, which also is within the reasonable request. Now, I mean, think back to the story of Abraham sending his servant to find a wife for Isaac. Going back in an episode, when the servant shows up in the town that he's going to find Isaac's wife in, he prays, "May the person who offers to water, give me water and to water
the camels.
My camels, may that person be, you know, the person lead me to the wife for Isaac." Same thing when Moses meets Zipporah, he winds up there at a well, and there's and he actually is the one now that takes care of their flocks, which was the reverse of what should be happening. And anyway, so this is a very common practice in those times, and for him to ask for bread was not unreasonable, and it wasn't, it wouldn't have been perceived as impolite.
Okay.
It would have been perceived as, well, yeah, and we're having a little famine going on here, and I'd love to do this for you. Are you really going to, I mean, you're asking for it, so I'll do it, but will you really take the last morsel of food out of me and my son's mouth? And again, Elijah comes back and says, "Look, I get what I'm asking for, and I'm going to need you to trust me. I promise you, as a prophet of Yahweh from Israel, that my God will make sure that your oil and your flour doesn't run out as long as I'm here with you. So yeah, get me some bread, and you'll actually not starve to death if you do what I ask." So what do you, so go ahead and logically put this in terms of a person living in that time and that place. What does she have to lose on this one? She has one meal to lose. If she doesn't do what Elijah, if she goes, she has one meal left and that's it for her. If she gives Elijah what he's asking for, there's a chance that she and her son may actually be provided for in a society that believes in these kind of miracles, that believes in these kind of possibilities. It's worth taking a shot from her standpoint of things. And I think this is one of the reasons why later on she says, "Now I really believe." Before she's like, "I don't," I mean.
Even as a believer in Baal?
Yeah. Because people in that time and place were not locked into monotheism. It was like, yeah, you have your God, I have my God. This is my God. This is the God that's primarily in my region. But I know there are many, many other gods out there that do all kinds of, that have different purposes. In fact, most people in that time and that place would have worshipped Baal, but they would have worshipped Asherah, and they would have put out an offering for Yahweh if they thought that might help them with something that they need. Every god had a purpose and something that was their kind of specialty. And so you would worship multiple gods, and it wouldn't be a foreign thought to you that Elijah, well, his God is traveling with him. He's brought him a little bit of him with him from his foreign country, so maybe that's how this is happening.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty cool for the context of what he's asking, and like you said, what she's probably thinking, going, well, it could be worse odds if this doesn't, either way, it's not going to work out. It's only because of this new opportunity that it really can work out.
Yeah.
I have to just say though, these guys that ask for a sign, and like, the sign that I want is for someone to water all my camels. The sign that I want is for someone.
Camels, like, drink a lot of water, though.
They drink a lot
of
water.
That's a big job.
Like I'd be like, oh, you know, let it be a sign unto me if someone shows up at my house and mows my lawn and trims my palm trees and does my dishes.
You never prayed for that before?
I guess my faith is too small.
I guess so.
But these signs are so convenient. Like, oh, let it be a sign unto me if somebody does all my work for me.
Send us another warrior, Lord. Oh, that's good. Well, and then you had mentioned that there was the ritual that restores her son. And you were going to go into that a little bit more on the podcast. I wanted to make sure we had time for that before we got into any questions or anything else.
And where I got this from was the Bible Background Commentary, which is one of my favorites, as most of you are figuring out. And in it, they... I'm just going to read it because I do not want to misquote this, but I'll summarize the first part. Basically, what happens is Elijah takes the boy upstairs, puts him on a bed, and then lays on top of him. And he does this three times. He puts his hands on his hands, his legs on his legs, face to face, and then he gets up, repeats three times, and the boy comes back to life. They kind of point out that some people have said, well, maybe he was doing CPR on the kid. Maybe that's what this is. The problem with that theory is that a grown man laying on top of a boy does not really generally normal CPR practice. It's not the way it's done, and it would actually kind of hinder your ability to breathe.
To
have somebody on top of you like that. And so what they suggest is that there's a different interpretation. They say in Mesopotamian incantation literature, the touching of part to part is a means by which demons exercise power over their intended victims. It is the idiom of position. In this belief, vitality or life force can be transferred from one body to the other by each part touching. By imitating the process believed to be used by demons, the prophet is able, through the power of Yahweh, through prayer, to drive the demons out of the boy's life. This is often considered to be one of the clearest cases of sympathetic magic in the Bible. And sympathetic magic, I had to look it up because I didn't know what that was. But sympathetic magic is basically where you do something that you pass something from yourself onto somebody else. And so basically... this interpretation of what happened is that Elijah is actually using, he's using something that would have been familiar in that time and that place, how demons would be put into a body, but he's actually putting Yahweh into this boy. He drives the demons out and actually takes God out of his life and puts it, not out of his life, but takes part of that and puts it into the boy, which brings the boy back to life, which is a fascinating thing that God is able to use that kind of a ritual for his purposes.
Wow.
The dark arts, which is interesting because that's what Ahab calls Elijah. You have brought a hex, you troubler of Israel, which actually it means something more like, what sort of dark arts have you been participating in that has brought this upon us? So it's interesting that he does this practice that looks like a practice of the dark arts.
And it's right before that.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Oh, that's my favorite part of the Red Book.
You troubler of Israel.
You troubler of Israel.
I love how people use that out of context today, too. They'll take that and they'll pass on a message to the church that they believe God has given them. They've done no sign like Elijah has. There's no sign, but they take that to mean that's kind of their way of saying, I'm speaking truth to power, that, you know, hey, I'm a troubler of Israel. Well, read the whole story through before you use that phrase and make sure that's really what you're doing as opposed to just making a statement, because Elijah had from Ahab's vantage point, Ahab gives Elijah credit. It's been 3 years. There's been no water. That's on you, buddy. You have really caused some massive problems here using dark arts. How dare you? look at all the suffering you've caused. And Elijah retorts, not me that did that, by the way. That's you. You're the one that's been causing these problems by the way that you've been behaving and what you, the false God that you brought into this country that can't do what you claim this God can do.
Yeah, that's really a full attack on, like, don't blame me. This is all you. I don't have the power to do it. That's neither does your God either. That's awesome. The idea that Elijah trash talking Baal's people on Mount Carmel during this thing, and that's always been kind of the fun. It's like it's one of the stories where you know how it ends, of course, but the suspense of how many people are there all day and they're ramping up their efforts, Baal's prophets, and trying to get something to happen, and then to assuming that this is God-sanctioned smackdown. That just adds a whole layer of fun to the story where it's just like, well. Maybe what was it? Maybe he's in the bathroom. Maybe he's asleep. Maybe he just on vacation. I don't know. That's probably it. Because otherwise, he could certainly do it if he was here. Pay attention.
I have to wonder how early they started with this. And maybe 6 or 7 in the morning or something. So they go to about noon. So that he's given them about 5 hours to do whatever they need to do. And so finally, I can just By the way, I didn't look. Anyway, no, I won't say this. So anyway, maybe they're looking at their sundials and they're like, it's going to be about noon. And Elijah's like, all right, come on, guys, how long is this going to take? What's fascinating to me is he gives them all the way to the evening sacrifice, so probably at least another 5, 6, 7 hours. So conceivably, it could have been 12 hours of these guys trying to get Baal's attention. So he doesn't give them the out of, you didn't give us enough time. He gives them all kinds of time.
But let's face it, if you're going to bring fire down from heaven at the golden hour, come on, yeah. That's when you want it.
Well, the interesting thing is they've been dancing around and engaging in this sort of ecstatic behavior and cutting themselves, also trying to get the attention of their God. And so later on, it talks about Elijah takes these 450 prophets and kills them. And you think, wow, that's one guy against 450, but maybe they were pretty anemic by then. I don't know.
Running the sword through one more time just to make sure it doesn't really count as a slaying, does it? That's more of a mercy.
I feel like Elijah had some help from the people.
Everybody grab
one.
I
know the Bible says Elijah did it, but
you're feeling
450 people. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. I don't feel like you just. I don't care if I don't care how cut up you are. I feel like if you're the last guy in line, you're headed out. This is not where you had guns and whatever. This would have been.
I don't know. I think if he can call down fire, he can probably slay 450. Didn't Samson slay a whole bunch
with a jawbone of a donkey? Yeah. I think it took him most of an afternoon, though. So I don't know.
Who knows the state of Elijah's hair at this point?
Yeah,
right.
For that kind of power,
but
I don't know.
Anyway.
That's wild. Well, I never knew the other part. I just thought was interesting was basically. Elijah runs nearly a marathon in the downpouring rain. Yeah. In sandals or barefoot? What do you think?
Barefoot.
Yeah, you'd have to, right? You can do that in sandals.
Triathlon. Call down fire. Slay prophets.
450.
Run.
Dispose of 450. Call down fire, dispose of 450, and then run a marathon?
Yeah.
Woo!
The Ironman before the Ironman.
That's it.
Right. Some pretty good physical shape, I'd say.
Well, yeah, he had to be a specimen.
Yeah, interesting, though. He had just spent... How much time?
Three years
with less nutrition than, well, I don't know. Who knows?
Apparently,
plus he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights at one point.
Then you must also have to figure then. So I'm thinking we're onto something, Ken, with your idea that maybe the ravens were stealing it from
Ahab. He fasted after. Sorry.
Because, like, you know, there had to be enough protein in that to keep him afloat if there was all this going on.
Well, I think that maybe there's also something to be thought about when it comes to why he runs away afterwards. When you're that emotionally and physically exhausted, you are not going to be in a good space if somebody threatens to take your life and has the means and the capability of doing it. And I think it's... Again, I think we look at Elijah and go, oh, how could he, you know, I do. How could he see God bring down fire from heaven and then just, you know, next thing you know, he's running off into the wilderness. Well, he ran, he ran 15 to 20 miles in the pouring rain. He'd had an incredibly emotionally taxing day.
He had low blood sugar.
Yeah. And, and for at that, you know, he had to have thought, okay, fire's come down from heaven. I've run ahead of Ahab. Ahab's been pretty pleasant to me at this point, open to me. So it's a new day in Israel. All the people said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. So that must be, it's going to be a new day, and I'm going to get to take a little vacation and take a little break and get back up on my feet, get back to my house, and just, you know. And then the next thing is like, oh, by the way, Ahab's had a change of heart, and Jezebel wants you dead, and that's going to happen because you're responsible for, you know, all the priests and of, you know, all these people being killed. And now she's coming for you. And you're, I don't know if you've ever been physically and emotionally worn out and been looking forward to a break and think, okay, this break is here. And then something happens where you don't get that break. Yeah. And you don't get to, and it is the hardest thing. I mean, this is one of the things they'll do to people in special forces when they're trying to train them in the military is they'll tell them to go a certain distance and they think it's over and nope, keep going. And that a hardship is, well, when is it ever going to be over?
Yeah.
Because if I have an endpoint, I can work towards that. But if there doesn't appear to be any endpoint, and here's Elijah, he's like gone for 3 years hiding out, trying to avoid. And then he has this huge moment where he thinks this is it. And then... nope, that's not it. You're going to have to run again, apparently. That's the way he takes it. I've got to run again.
Yeah.
And he runs off into the desert and says, like, I just want to die. I've had enough. For 3 years I've been hiding. For 3 years I've been terrified. I do the biggest miracle that I possibly could do, and it's not enough. It's not enough for people to really change around. And so I'm done. I am the last prophet of God. I am it. Nobody else is just me. And might as well just die, God. And again, as I said in the sermon, I just love how God handles Elijah. He does not shame him. Oh, I can't believe, where's your faith, Elijah? You know, I fed you for 3 years, and then I brought fire down. Now you're running off. Come on, Elijah, grow up. You know? He doesn't do what I would have done to Elijah. Instead, he feeds him. I mean, God takes care of him. He lets him rest. He lets him sleep. And then he says, okay, now I need you to travel to Mount Sinai, to my mountain, and I need you to show up there. And so Elijah travels there. The still small voice eventually comes out of after the wind, the fire, and the earthquake, and speaks to him and says, "Hey, I've got another assignment for you, though. This is your next assignment. And by the way, there are 700 people in Israel who have never worshipped Baal. You're not the only one, Elijah.
Yeah,
you're not the only one. You're not alone." And I think that's one of the hardest things as a human being, to feel like you're alone. I'm the only one. I'm suffering by myself. And God says, no, you're not. You're not. There's 700 other people who have never worshipped Baal. You're not alone. There are people out there that are your people.
What a great message to hear in totality after that whole thing and being in that state where it's fight or flight for so long. And then, you know, you finally wind down and like, yeah, you're not the only one. That's pretty cool. All right. Before we turn it over to Lucas to look into questions, did we have? No. Okay. Well, we did have a text message that came in about after 2 o'clock on Saturday. It said, hello, I am one of the young adult members. When Pastor Ken said it was story time during the sermon, I was very excited to hear the story from the story book of my childhood. I'm glad we all read the same stories when we were younger. However, I was then very disappointed that Ken did not go on to actually read the story. from the Red storybook. Can we please get a story next Sabbath? Thank you. Whoever you are, you made my day when I read that text.
If you come find me or send me a text message, I will read. I will call you up and read the story to you. Or you can come to my office and I will read the story to you.
Well, maybe what we can do is we can have what's upcoming this week?
What?
What story?
I need to talk to Melanie about that because I want to make a change. But before I make the change, I need to get permission.
The story that you might make a change to, or the current story, are they in the Red Books?
They are not. Well, actually, the one that I'm supposed to do this Sabbath is in the Red Books.
Okay, so if we stick with what we're going to do, let's do this. Let's do this. Next week, we will start the podcast with even if we switch. We'll have Ken read the story from the Red Book to begin the podcast.
Well, do you just want to do a special episode where I read the story from the Red Book?
Because we could do this week, because she really – I say she. I don't know if you're he, she. I don't – no, you didn't leave your name. I don't know who it was. So whoever you are
– can we have Lucas scan the pictures from the Red Book into the and put those in the show notes?
I can put them in Discord.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. Maybe we can do the last week's because they were really hoping it was that one. And then maybe we can do the other one even if we don't do it.
So, dear, kind, gentle listener.
That's right.
Text Randy.
That's right.
And because I failed you on Sabbath, you tell him which story you want. So if you want the story of Elijah, I can do that.
Yep.
If you want a different one, however, I'll do whatever you ask for since I let you down.
All right. There you go. You can't have Randy do it because I change a lot of the stuff in the book because I don't like the I don't care for the wording anymore so much in certain places.
I will read it word for word.
And if I have to say the woman of Shushan 88 times in the same story.
Shunem.
Or is it Shunem? Yeah. Well, whatever it is, I don't say it. That's why I don't know it, because it's dumb. And so that is in our reading. And
if
then,
I have to say Orlando, I will not do it because that's a – who wants to say the name of a place that somebody's
so
from?
So when Elisha was visiting Donna and Jim, they put a – ask Emily. I will come up with different names. It's been – whoever we decide that night are our people from Shunem. They get real names that we can identify with.
Okay.
So you can't – I really am not the person to ask. So that is great, though. Please do text 407-965-1607 podcast at wholelife.church, and we will get that ready for next week. That's awesome. I'm ready for this. We don't really know about this week. But then after this week, what do we got left? We got two more after that?
I think we have three.
Three? Is that three?
I think we are going to do Paul's shipwreck.
Ooh.
We are doing. Oh yes. Okay. We're doing the eunuch that met Philip and got baptized.
Mm.
So we have that one, and then we have water and how it's used in prophecy.
Mm. That finishes up. Man, and when that gets done, it's going to be the end of July.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have mystery for this coming week.
We do.
Show up
and see what happens.
Yeah, there you go.
see whether Melanie wins the arm wrestling match or Ken does.
Ooh. And if we know when it's going to happen, I'll have Lucas. We'll try to get that live if we can. Okay. All right. There you go. Yeah. Check the also this week, this episode, just go ahead and check the Discord channel. I don't know if I mentioned it last episode, but there are pictures of the aforementioned Carolina Dave and some of us from staff. And
nice.
So if you've never got a chance to meet him, which I'm sure you probably haven't, you'll at least get an idea of who he is. And we'll have those pictures and some other fun stuff in there. So go check that out. It is. All right. That's going to do it for this week, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week.